time I was with you, we were looking at the third chapter of the book of Job, so we'll go to chapter 4 tonight. In fact, we want to cover chapters 4 and 5. The book of Job, chapter 4. Let us read the first 5 verses to begin with. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, "If we essay to commune with thee, wilt thou be grieved? Who can withhold himself from speaking? Behold, thou hast instructed many, and thou hast strengthened the weak hands. Thy words have upholden him that was falling, and thou hast strengthened the feeble knees. But now it has come upon thee, and thou faintest. It toucheth thee, and thou art troubled." Let us stop there for a moment or two, as we'll take the chapter in little sections. Now let us capture again in our minds what we've seen in the opening 3 chapters. You remember, we saw a scene on earth in which we learned something about this man called Job, the type of man he was, his character. Then we were transferred, as it were, to listen to a challenge that was given in heaven. God challenges the devil. "Hast thou considered my servant Job?" And after that challenge, we're brought back down to earth, and the conflict begins to rage on earth. And you saw what Job passed through. Many trials that came upon him rapidly, one after the other. Then we go back up to heaven again. There's a second challenge. God still upholds his servant Job. And down comes the enemy again. Let's go at this man. He's brought right down, you'd say, to bankruptcy in every aspect. You find him now no longer a rich, prosperous farmer with a large family. You find him bereft of all his family, 7 sons and 3 daughters. All his stock has been stolen or destroyed. His wife turns against him, and he's sitting out there, out amongst the rubbish, sitting amongst the ashes, an outcast. And at the end of chapter 2, his 3 supposed friends come along. They come with every good intention. That is, they're going to comfort the man in all his trouble. But they sit there for a whole week and never say a word to him. And at last, when you come to chapter 3, Job can't take any more. And he bursts out. And you have Job's great lamentation in chapter 3. That was the last study we had, how Job expresses himself. Now when you come to chapter 4, one of his 3 supposed friends, later on Job calls them miserable comforters. I would take it that this is the oldest one of them. And he starts to speak. Now as you read down through chapters 4 and 5 then, you've got this great speech of this man, Eliphaz. This is the commencement of the great controversy now, not between God and Satan, not between Job and his wife, but this is the controversy between Job and his friend. One of them speaks and Job answers. Another one speaks and Job answers. Third one speaks and Job answers. And then they go their cycle again and so on. Now much that this man says may be true, as we'll see as we read down through it. He may state a lot of facts. But in the final analysis, when you come to the bottom line, you discover here then what he's saying is not applicable to Job. Now let me lay down a little principle here that may help us. You cannot come to a proper conclusion and make a decision about anything until you know all the facts. Now isn't that what happens in a law court? The witnesses are called in for and against. They take the oath and they promise that they shall tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. They don't always do it, of course, but they're supposed to. That's what they promise to do. And those that have to make the decision are supposed to listen and they get all the facts. And after they know all the facts, they can weigh them up and come to a decision. Here's what happens if you try to make a decision without knowing all the true facts. You know these things. Do you remember that occasion when Paul and Silas were in the prison at Philippi? There was the Philippian jailer who awakened out of his sleep at night when that thunderstorm was on. And when he saw the prison doors open, he immediately imagined that all the prisoners had fled. And if it had been true, that was going to be a rough day for him. He would be the dead man in the morning for failing in his duty. And do you remember what he said? Supposing the prisoners had fled, he took out his little sword and was about to plunge it right in through his heart. He's about to commit suicide. Supposing the prisoners had fled. Paul and Silas in the darkness looks out where the light is and they see what he's about to do and they said, do yourself no harm, we're all here. But you see, he didn't know all the facts. Because he didn't know all the facts, he was about to make the wrong decision, do the wrong thing. Do you remember the two on the road to Emmaus? The faith was shattered. Absolutely shattered. They didn't know it was the Lord that was with them and they said, no. We trusted it was he that should have delivered Israel, but unfortunately he's been crucified. The nation wouldn't have him. Not only so, he was buried and some women folks have been there and they said that even the tomb's empty. We just don't know even where his body is now. They were, we're going to be back home. They've lost the faith, not knowing all the facts. He says, O foolish one, slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have spoken, ought not Christ have suffered these things, then enter into his glory. Do you remember Mary in the garden? She didn't know it was the Lord. She said, no, supposing him to be the gardener. If you've taken him away, tell me where you've laid him and I'll go and get him. She didn't know it was the Lord, the risen Lord, standing beside her. A final one, just to prove this point. Do you remember the case of Joseph? He was just about to put Mary away. That is, he was going to refuse to go through with the wedding ceremony. Supposing, of course, that Mary had been unfaithful to him. When God intervened and he said, now Joseph, don't be afraid to take Mary to be your wife. That which is conceived in her is of the Holy Ghost. See, Joseph didn't know all the facts. He was a good man, an upright, righteous man, about to do the wrong thing, not knowing all the facts. Philippian jailer about to take his own life, not knowing all the facts. Here we come back to this great philosopher here. Oh, this great counselor. He's going to give counsel here to Job, but he doesn't know all the facts. And you know, that's the strangest thing today. We're hearing an awful lot about this counseling. Psychiatrists. How can they possibly come to a decision on any matter if they don't know all the facts? You don't learn these things in a book. I've often told them I've known some old washerwomen that had no education. They knew more about spiritual psychiatry than some of them has gone through college and supposed to have been taught and trained in it all. Why? Because I've learned it by experience. Now here's a man, he's got a tremendous amount of knowledge. And he's going to apply himself, he's going to speak first to Job. Now remember, he came first of all to comfort him. But he doesn't give very much comfort. He finishes up criticizing him and condemning him. But he came along in order to comfort. Now see his first line of argument here. I wonder how often you and I have used this argument. And we thought it so wise. Now look what he says. I've read to you those verses. But look where I believe the summation of the whole thing comes in. Verse 5. But now it has come upon thee and thou faintest. It touches thee and thou art troubled. In plain words, Job, listen to what I've got to say to you. We've thought a lot about you in the past. You've been a great man, an upright man, a God-fearing man. I wonder how often you have helped others. How often have you given counsel to others? But now it's come upon you and you're crying out and complaining. What about now the comfort you've given to others? What about the instruction you've given to others? When disaster strikes you, you fail, you go under. You say, that sounds good reasoning. But is it? Is it? I'll ask you, is that any comfort to anyone? That doesn't bring any comfort. Oh, it may sound very wise. It may appear to be very intelligent. See, Job, see what you've been in the past. You've been a good man. You've been a great man. You've been an upright man. Why, you've been an example to others. And when they were going through the troubles and trials, you were the man that came to, and you were able to go to them and give them some counsel and encouragement. But now the thing has struck you, and when it's come to you, you're faint. Not a good example now. And now remember, this is the man that came along to give comfort. Now let us read on. Let us read from verses 6 through 11 and see now. He has reproached Job in these opening verses, but watch this. Is not this thy fear, thy confidence, thy hope, and the uprightness of thy ways? Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished being innocent, or where were the righteous cut off, even as I have seen, they that plough iniquity and sow wickedness. Read the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils are they consumed. The roaring of the lion and the voice of the fierce lion, and the teeth of the young lion are broken. The old lion perisheth for lack of prey, and the stout lion's whelps are scattered abroad. What a poetic speech. You see how this man can stand up, and with his oratory he can lay it off. What is he telling Job in these verses, I wonder? You see, in the first 5 verses, he has reproached Job for his despair. You were supposed to be the helper to others, now you're in despair yourself. Now, in the second section, he says, now it's true, Job, that God favors the righteous. God shows favor to the righteous. In plain words, if you were the righteous man that you profess to be, you wouldn't be in that state that you're in. Is that any comfort? In plain words, his argument is this, that whatever comes as a harvest comes as the result of something that's been sown. These things don't just spring out of the ground themselves. There's the ploughing and there's the sowing, and then there's the harvest. You see, he's using this as a great parable or an illustration, and he's saying to Job, what you're suffering now, Job, must be the result of some sowing in the past. Plain words, you're not the man you profess to be. You're not the man we thought you were. For God shows favor to the righteous. But isn't it just true that God sometimes shows favor to those who are not righteous? You see, this is only part of it. You remember the psalmist said he couldn't understand why he saw the wicked prosper. Not the righteous, the wicked were prospering. And the righteous were suffering. And he couldn't understand that until he went into the sanctuary, got into the presence of God. And when he saw things from God's point of view, it altered his whole concept regarding these things. But this man here, this lawyer, this philosopher, he hadn't learned those things. He says, no, all I know is this, that God favors the righteous. And if he's not showing favor to you, Job, it's because of some sin in your life. Would that be any comfort to anyone to be told then? Now let's go on. See the next little section from verse 12 right through to verse 21. And he says something here that will stagger some of us. Verse 12. Now a thing was secretly brought to me, and mine ear received a little thereof, in thoughts from the visions of the night, when deep sleep followed on men, fear came upon me in trembling, which made all my bones to shake. Then a spirit passed before my face. The hair of my flesh stood up, stood still, but I could not discern the form thereof. The image was before mine eyes. There was silence, and I heard a voice saying, shall mortal man be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his maker? Behold, he put no trust in his servant, and his angels he charged with folly. How much less is them that dwell in the houses of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, which are crushed before the moth. They are destroyed from morning to evening. They perish forever without any regarding it. Doth not their excellency, which is in them, go away? They die even without wisdom. He's the man who says, now look, I've got something that you haven't got, Job. I've had a vision from God. I've had a revelation given to me. Let me ask you, Job, do you think you're better than the angels in heaven? And if God charges the angels with folly, surely he's entitled to charge you with folly. You only live in a house of clay. See, this man, he's got a great idea of this. And he claims that this was something that was given to him in the quietness of the night. A vision from God. But then, if what he's saying here is true, not only should it be true concerning Job, it should be true concerning himself. He should be applying it to himself. Which you would see he's not doing. Plain words, he's simply thrusting it over to the man who's passing through this awful time of trouble. No comfort. So therefore, he has reproached Job because of him being down in despair. He's charged him now with the fact that he must be a sinful man. And by the way, all the three of them, one after the other in making the speeches, all come down to this basic fact, Job, you have sinned in some way or another that this tragedy has come upon you. You see, what they haven't learned and what you and I'll have to learn as we study through this book is this, that all discipline doesn't come because of sin. It's not all retributive. For instance now, use that word discipline for a moment. Why do children go to school? They're sent to school in order to be taught. But in order to be taught, they've got to be disciplined. Now, you parents know that you cannot let a child do what he or she likes. Because if you let them do what they like, in a few years' time, they're not going to like what they do. But parents will try to teach the child. They'll discipline them. They'll say, yes, you can do that. And no, you can't do that. That's not enough. That's discipline. You teach them. You discipline them. But then there's another way of discipline. If a child rebels and does the thing they're told not to do, then there's always the shed. That's where they used to take them, to the woodshed. That's where the switch was kept. Or in the room. I think I told you once before, I knew an old man in the family of 13. And after they all sat down and had supper at night, after they had supper and he read the scriptures, no one would dare move from the table until Dad had read the scriptures. Pray. And then Mum spoke next. She gave the report. Every night was a report. And if anyone was in that report of misbehaving, middle room. His oldest son told me, he said, you know, when he got us in that middle room, what he said to us hurt us more than the switch. We had to listen to a lecture and then the switch. And we're well trained as discipline. But you see, discipline could be retributive. It could be because of something done. But discipline could also be educative. To educate them in what they were to do. When you come to the Word of God, you'll find that there are times when God has got to educate us. Here in this particular book, we're learning something that's educative. Not something that's retributive. But this man didn't know that. He said, if you're suffering, it must be because of sin. Not necessarily. Then again, he said, now look, you've got to learn this. If God charges the angels with folly, how much more us? Now go into chapter 5 for a moment. And look at the first 5 verses of chapter 5. He's still talking, this man. Call now, if there be any that will answer thee, and to which of the saints wilt thou turn? For wrath killeth the foolish man, and envy slayeth the sillier one. I have seen the foolish taking root, but suddenly I cursed his habitation. His children are far from safety, and they are crushed in the gate. Neither is there any to deliver them, whose harvest the hungry eateth up, and taketh it even out of the thorns, and the robber swalloweth up their substance. You see, this man, as I have indicated to you, must have been a great poetic orator. The way that he rolls it out. And the need verses, he's speaking of the experience of God's way, as if he had experienced it. Plain words, he knows all the thing in theory. And he said, now Job, this is the way it works. And these are the things that happen. These are the things we've seen. We know how God works with them. And if that's how God works with the foolish, that's how he's working with you. You haven't been the man of wisdom that you profess to be. You've been a foolish man somewhere along the line. You've been doing something that's wrong. So therefore, when you come now to verse 6, here he gives an exhortation to Job. Although affliction cometh not forth of the dust, neither doth trouble spring up out of the ground, yet man is born unto trouble as the sparks fly upwards. I would seek unto God, and unto God would I commit my cause, which doeth great things and unsearchable, marvelous things without number, who giveth rain upon the earth and sendeth waters upon the field, to set up on high those that be low, that those which mourn may be exalted to safety. Now he's giving Job, you see, a little bit exhortation.
plain words he's saying is that, well, now I've told you what has been revealed to me. I've told you what I have witnessed, what I know, how God works. If I was in your place, Job, this is what I would do. I would turn and I'd put my case entirely in God's hands. Cast yourself upon God and accept whatever he does. And that sounds good advice, doesn't it? How does he know that what Job has already done that? How does he know what's in Job's heart? Is he only going according to the lamentation that was given to us in chapter 3? He is a man trying to give an exhortation to Job. And that man who's sitting there in all his trials and all his troubles, the better fit of giving the exhortation to him. And he speaks. Now look at verse 12. He disappointed the devices of the crafty, so that their hands cannot perform their enterprise. He taketh the wise in their own craftiness, and the counsel of the froward is carried headlong. They meet with darkness in the daytime, and grope in the noonday as in the night. But he saveth the poor from the sword, from their mouth, and from the hand of the mighty. So the poor hath hope, and iniquity stoppeth her mouth. In plain words, he's saying here in these verses, Job, don't you realize that there is triumph over evil so far as God is concerned? And if I'm in God's hand, there will be triumph. But it's obvious, Job, it's not for you. You have not gone the right way about it. You're complaining. And it's obvious you'll have to root up this evil, whatever it is. This thing doesn't come as a harvest unless it be so. Now then, that being so, come to these closing verses of this man's great speech. Look at verse 17. Behold, happy is the man whom God corrected. That's true. You see, I said this man speaks a lot of truth. But somehow what he's saying was not applicable to Job and in his trouble. Behold, happy is the man whom God corrected. Therefore despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty. How often have you heard that quoted, but you never stopped to ask who it was who said it. It's said by this great philosopher, Eliphaz, Temanite, while he's speaking to Job. Behold, happy is the man whom God corrected. Therefore despise not thou the chastening of the Almighty. For he maketh sore and bindeth up. He woundeth and his hands make whole. He shall deliver thee in 6 troubles. Yea, in 7 there shall no evil touch thee. In famine he shall redeem thee from death, and in war from the power of the sword. Thou shalt be hid from the scourge of the tongue, neither shalt thou be afraid of destruction when it cometh. At destruction and famine thou shalt laugh, neither shalt thou be afraid of the beasts of the earth, for thou shalt be in league with the stones of the field. And the beast of the field shall be at peace with thee. And thou shalt know that thy tabernacle shall be in peace. And thou shalt visit thy habitation and shalt not sin. Thou shalt know also that thy seed shall be great. And thine offspring is the grass of the earth. Thou shalt come to thy grave in a full age. Like as a shock of corn cometh in its season. Lo, this we have said. So it is. Hear it, and know thou it, all thy good. And end here the speech of Eliphaz the Temanite. He is like a lot of great wisdom, great orator, great speech.
A speech like this was given in certain circles today. They would rise to their feet and give a standing ovation. And that man sitting in the ashes, scraping himself with a potsherd, has got a lot of wisdom. He's going to answer this man. And he'll answer all the other. Remember this. Only when God speaks, as you come near the end of the book, only when God speaks is the truth brought up. There's failure with every one of them. There's something they miss. And there's something that Job misses. Until he listens to what God has to say. And when God speaks, the truth is out. The judge gives the verdict. And the latter end of this man is better than at the first. The time's gone. Perhaps our brother Lacey will dismiss us with a word of prayer. I might say I have a friend we're expecting to come in and visit with us Friday night, stay with us till Monday. In years that have passed, he used to do quite a good lot of ministering of the word. But I don't know if he still is doing it because he had a heart condition a few years ago. But when he comes, we'll see anyway. And if he feels like it and is able, perhaps he'll speak to us on Sunday night. We'll wait and see when he arrives. He's in Canada just now. He flew over on Monday from Scotland and arrived in Niagara Falls, and he's flying down here on Friday to spend a few days with us here. So you might hear a strange accent that he speaks on Sunday night. He speaks with a Scottish accent. So you may be able to follow him.